Good morning, and welcome back once again, folks, to another edition of Drive Time Friday. This is a show where we try to make sense out of what's going on in the world, maybe even talk about a few other things as well. And I look forward to the time of being able to get together with my co-hosts. This morning, we've only got one of them, unfortunately. Jeff is not going to be with us, but we have Tim Kern here as well. I'm, of course, Mark Call in snowy, at this point, southern Colorado. And, Tim, there's a whole lot going on. How you doing, and where would you like to start in a week like this?
Well, you know, let's. I'd like to start with a real question. I'm in a city that was kind of abandoned by. Well, they had all their eggs in one basket, and the basket walked away. And 30 years ago, this town had almost 100,000 people in it. Now it's got 55. And for many years during the 80s, it was the foreclosure capital of the country.
You're not talking about
Indianapolis,
are you? And then
they finally ran out of houses to foreclose on. I'm near Indianapolis. I'm in Anderson, Indiana, which was a General Motors town through and through.
Okay. I just wanted to make that clear because I'm thinking Indianapolis is much bigger than that. So now I'm on the page with you.
Oh, Indianapolis is way bigger than that. Yeah, Indianapolis is surprisingly large. It's bigger than Boston or San Francisco. It's closing in on Detroit, but Detroit's helping a lot. But what happened? I moved here in 2007, and I stopped in a little coffee shop, and they immediately recognized a foreigner. They said, "What you doing?" I said, "I'm moving here." And about 14 people said, "You're not looking for work, are you?" So,
wow.
And I said, "No, I brought my own job." And since then, of course, the rest of the country has really been picking up, and this little city is just struggling like crazy. And I keep asking why, and I talk to people, and I find out that possibly as many as a third of the households have somebody in there with a drug problem. Either they're using or they're manufacturing or they're selling or something. And you go to the high school, we had two, now we've got one, and you go there and the kids aren't really interested in work because on the weekend they can drive to Chicago and bring drugs up and guns back, and they can make $1,000 in a weekend. So why are they worried about getting a job making $9 an hour?
Wait a minute. Did you just say they could bring guns back from gun-free Chicago?
Well, yeah, they're not really free there, though.
Okay. You just have to trade drugs for them.
Yeah.
You can't buy them for money, of course.
You just trade drugs for them.
Well, that's good to know.
And then they bring the drugs back here and they make – or their guns back here and they make some more money selling the guns. But the thing is, how do you get rid of that? I mean, it was New Year's Eve and I was listening, you know, it's midnight, so there's going to be some fireworks and stuff. We also had full auto firing going on. I mean, within 5 or 6 houses of where I live. And, you know, I felt like
those are probably just bump stocks, Tim.
No.
No, you can tell the difference. I know. Yes. Okay.
I have a trained ear, you know, and, no, I know for a fact what it was. And, one of them was a Big Mac 11, you know.
Okay. Well, so basically you're in a small town that's getting smaller because it's got a lot of problems. And I guess to some extent I'm tempted to say, okay, so how is that different than so much of America that's not getting the other kind of drug, the fake money drug boom going on? In other words, I don't want to say so what, but I want to say, how is that unusual? What's the hook here? Did I lose you?
What do you do? You run the city. What do you do? By the way, you've got seven on-duty police officers at any given time.
Okay. I actually dropped out for a second there. Thankfully, we're back. So I hope the audience heard all of that, but I missed it. So my question that I don't think I actually even got out was, where's the hook? You kind of laid out the problem, but I want to make sure we connect it and say, okay, what's the big question here?
Well, the big question is, now you're in charge of this city. What do you do? And how do we get rid of the drugs and also keep a future for the good kids, You know, two out of three aren't involved in it. Where do we go? Every shop has a sign that says help wanted, but they're all $7 or $8 or $9 jobs, and the kids can't pass the drug tests anyhow. It got so bad that one of the biggest employers here, our Walmart Supercenter, they just suspended the drug tests. They said we can't hire anybody, so they stopped testing.
Sure, that works for Congress. Why bother to give them an oath, right? If you know they're just going to lie anyway, so who cares?
Well, right. But aside from fixing Congress, which is a bigger problem, how do you fix a town?
Well, I'm going to suggest the answer is the same, and unfortunately, it's not going to be allowed to happen, and that's perhaps even the bigger problem. In other words, you get rid of the Black Teenage Unemployment Act, the minimum wage, and you allow people to say, okay, you want to hire somebody? You go ahead and pay them what the job is worth. They can choose to work or not work. Uh-oh, wait a minute. Well, that would be free enterprise, and we haven't had that here for a long, long time. Along with so many other things that are disincentives to work, to provide for the future, to build a business, you name it.
Well, sure, but there's a limit to what you can do in a given city.
You bet.
The other thing I pointed out is that these kids can make $1,000 a weekend just driving to Chicago and back.
Well, that's probably because...
And there's some entrepreneurial spirit going on right there. It's just kind of the wrong stuff.
Well, it's the same root cause. It's all about saying, well, we're going to disallow people from getting honest jobs, doing work that provides real employment, but we will instead incentivize criminality on every front, basically drug lords and criminal crime lords, you name it. If it's illegal and the people want it, somebody's willing to pay for it, there'll be a free market. It's just not going to work out for the betterment of society as a general rule.
Well, the black markets, of course, keep societies alive in a lot of third world nations because, of course, they're so totally regulated and policed that they can't do anything.
Which is why they become third world, which is the goal for here. Well, Tim, let me. I'm not going to change the subject, but it's going to sound like it for just a second. But back to another local issue, and I did the entire Come Out of Her My People show last night on this topic. I got a jury duty summons a while back. And went in to see just exactly how bad that system has gotten. I know you're very familiar with the concept of jury nullification and what people like John Adams said and Thomas Jefferson about trial by jury being the only anchor yet devised by the mind of man by which a government can be held to the principles of its constitution, which is why they have worked so hard to destroy it.
And
it was really, I'm not going to tell the whole story. If people want to, they can download the show from last night. But essentially, it was downright disgusting, because for the second time in a row, last time I got called was several years ago. By the way, I don't ever sit on a jury because when they ask me, "Will you take that oath to judge the facts only and the law as I give it to you?" My response is to be a little bit more blunt. No, it's not just no; it's hell no, because the juror has that obligation to judge the facts and the law, and that's what I will do. So I'm not going to take an oath to essentially have a jury-rigged trial rather than trial by jury. Well, that means you're going to get kicked out of there. And for me, the education is always, how are they doing it today? And to make a, well, it's a fairly long story, but I sat there for several hours and was actually able to speak my piece several times before they finally said dismissed for cause. And it'll be interesting to see. But anyway, what I started to say was the second time in the last two times I've been called in where jury nullification really was the issue. The trial a couple years back, they didn't want anybody that understood the Second Amendment because they were trying to basically, railroad some poor fella into prison on a bogus weapons charge. He was brandishing a firearm on his own property against somebody who was trespassing. How dare he think he has a right to defend his own property with a firearm? And, so they don't want anybody that understands what the supreme law of the land is there. This time, and here's where the connection comes, this time it had to do with a statute. Now, I did some research after I got back yesterday, but it's a statute that has been kind of like a cancer appearing all over the country. And it essentially says if you dare to call out a public servant, what an ironic term here, And in this case, it was a fellow who had some kind of problem. I don't know the facts of the situation. Weren't allowed to hear that. But the law, the so-called law, essentially says, if you threaten a public service, no, that's not it. If you say something, if you attempt to influence a public servant, to influence their vote or their opinion or their performance by saying something, if you keep violating the Constitution, I'll see that you never get reelected. Well, that's a threat against their job. That is now, and I kid you not, a felony. And that was essentially what seemed to have happened here. And so essentially, you look at the situation and you say, well, this is a law that needs to be jury nullified. And that's why they were making darn sure that they got only the ignorant who weren't about to ask questions like, we just heard the DA go through this big long deal about how we have to be treated equal, and this guy is going to be pro se, so will you judge him badly, or will you cut him slack because he's pro se? And I'm thinking, the answer is you're supposed to be held to a higher standard because you're an alleged officer of the court. But on the other hand, if he gets up in this trial and says, you know what, if you violate your oath and try to convict me of a bogus felony, I will see that you lose your job. Whoa, he just committed another one. So, to connect all these dots, Tim, the problem is we live in a land where steadily, increasingly, anything that even remotely looks like the ability to speak back against the tyranny, much less to prevent the complete destruction of towns like yours, people are going to jail. So why not be a criminal, run drugs and guns because, the drugs are no more illegal than they're trying to make the guns. I am disgusted by it, but I'm not the least surprised.
Well, you've got several issues on the table there. And one of the things I always ask people when they say, hey, how do we get out of jury duty? Of course, your answer is a sure thing. But
yeah, know the truth. They'll never set you.
But what I ask them is, if you were unjustly accused, wouldn't you want you on the jury instead of somebody that thinks a sandwich and $10 is a good deal?
Absolutely.
So then you've got the conflict here of do you want to leave the jury trials to the folks who don't know what you know, or do you want to be on the jury and make the difference that would have some justice happen?
Well, now, what you're saying though, Tim, is that if you understand the law and know what jury nullification is, by the way, I didn't use the term. I waited for the judge to get around to asking it. And he says, are you talking about jury nullification? I said, well, I didn't use that term. You did. But I will tell you, I am talking about trial by jury. And if you don't have that, you don't have trial by jury. So he didn't appreciate that either. But that's the
truth.
Well,
yeah, you're pretty much asking for it, of course. But
the thing is, Tim, you have to lie. You have to say, because they will ask now. They've been doing this in Colorado and in most states. Matter of fact, every state that I'm aware of, I have not heard from all 50, but I've had people call and send me emails from literally all over the country on this topic. They will ask you, will you judge the facts only in the laws I give it to you? And you have to say yay or nay. And if you lie to that, then they, as you saw with Laura Creho, they will tell you that's a crime. So I have no intention of not being honest. My hope is that at least some of the jurors there who may not have understood the issue might have figured it out when I was dismissed for cause. And perhaps even the defendant will make some good points. He should have, if he's been paying attention, grounds for appeal. By saying, hey, I asked for a trial by jury, and any juror that understood the whole point was dismissed.
Well, that's all well and good. It's funny, too. I was down to, there were two jurors left. There was only one spot left, and they had dismissed all the other 400 people, and they had 11 jurors impaneled. And it was down to me and an active attorney who had worked on the judge's reelection campaign.
Okay.
And, of course, I was teaching U.S. history at the time.
Oh, that should be disqualifying.
They asked us both if we believed in the principle of jury nullification, straight out.
Yeah.
Because they figured both of us would know what they were talking about. And I said, absolutely. And they said, well, it never happens. I said, it just happened. And they said, how do you mean that? I said, well, look at the Senate trial of Bill Clinton. He was obviously guilty. Everybody said he was guilty. Everybody knew he was guilty. On the other hand, they let him go in the face of known felonies. And the judge just looked at the lawyer. And then he looked at the two lawyers that were trying the case. And the judge looks at me and says, you can go home. So that was the end of that.
Yeah. Well, that's the point. And that was I ended the show last night, or at least somewhere close to the end, by noting that you've heard the old joke. There's four boxes in a free society: soap, ballot, jury, and cartridge. Use in this order. And we're literally seeing the place where all of those boxes now have been completely gutted. And what bugs me, again, the point of this trial seems to be a law that when I got back and looked it up, and I had railed against it several years ago when it was first being talked about nationwide, literally criminalizes talking to a so-called public servant to influence them and threatening something like, if you don't do your job, I'll make sure you don't get reelected. That is now being turned into a felony, for crying out loud. And of course,
now, does that apply to registered lobbyists, or is that only an anti freelance lobbyist thing or an anti-citizen thing?
No, here's the thing. When I was looking at the law, and when I was listening, by the way, to the district attorney screening out people and asking really silly, are there too many laws? Do you think there's too many laws in the United States? And I didn't raise my hand. And my rationale was, no, it's not that there's too many laws. It's that there's too many laws that aren't laws at all that are being enforced. And so at the time, I hadn't read the statute again, so I want to make that clear. It wasn't until I got home and read it, but I had a suspicion, just based on the questioning, where she was headed. So the bigger point here, Tim, I guess, is people need to be aware of it. Trial by jury has been gutted, like these other things. And I couldn't help but think the words, here's where I was going with this, void for vagueness. You read the statute, and you go, who does it apply to? Well, it could be anybody. What does it prohibit? Well, it could be anything. Because just about anything can influence the so-called public servant. And it even says this doesn't necessarily mean a state employee or this federal employee or other. Could be contractors, could be all kinds of things. I'm asking, hey, how about if you're in the jury room trying to influence a juror? Is that, a crime, a felony, while you're trying this fellow for a felony? It's that bad. And this is the problem. Of course, you're not allowed, if you're not a judge, to say that a law is void for vagueness, because you're not going to be allowed to sit on a jury anyway. But in so many respects, this particular statute is so bad. No wonder they were very, very concerned about making sure anybody that understood the concept was drummed out of there.
Well, you look at that, and then once again you say, well, how do we get educated people, educated in the law, that is, educated people onto juries? And how do we simply do it? Because once you've gone to the jury room, you are on your own. And anything you set out in front, all you have to say is, geez, I was confused by your question. I didn't know what that meant. But hey, here's the deal. The guy's innocent. And of course, Alexander Hamilton got away with it for many, many years because he was supplying all the black market stuff that everybody in the colonies needed. And every time the British would arrest him, they'd go to trial, he'd have a jury, and the jury would acquit him no matter how guilty he was under the law. And so it works if you can have an educated jury, or even just a recalcitrant jury.
Well, let me add one more thing to the story here, Tim. I didn't emphasize this yesterday, but it's key, because once upon a time, and I remember talking to a mutual friend of ours, the late Dr. Norm Resnick, years ago about this, and he said one of his goals, and I've shared it, was to walk into a courtroom full of prospective jurors, quote John Adams, the one that I just quoted, that the juror has not only the right but the obligation to judge the facts and the law according to his own conscience.
Yeah.
And to see the entire jury pool dismissed, because they've now heard the truth and been tainted. But trust me, they don't do that anymore, because most people, it just rolls off their you know, rolls over them like water off a duck's back. They don't get it. They don't understand. But the judge will tell them, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. And they'll say, oh, okay, sure.
Well, then the question then becomes, what can we do? Who is going to tell anybody? Who is going to show anybody?
We're doing it now in part. We're doing all that's about left. You know, the advantage of the jury, for those that have never heard this, but the idea was all it took back when we had honest trial by jury was 1 in 12. Because there was no such thing as a hung jury. When they could not find someone guilty unanimously, that by definition meant he was innocent and he walked, not guilty. And nowadays they say, oh, well, if you can't coerce that last holdout who's actually read the Constitution, well, we'll call that a hung jury and we'll try it again until we get the verdict we want, which, you know, isn't the point either. So, go ahead.
And not guilty does not mean innocent either.
You got it.
It simply means that the case was not made. You know, the case for guilt was not made. And that's fine. If somebody is the other question, of course, do we have too many laws? What we have is arbitrary enforcement, which, of course, lets the bad laws skate until somebody that needs to be convicted gets convicted.
Well, and that's the point. The selective enforcement, Ayn Rand wrote about it in Atlas Shrugged, is absolutely evil. It's the way that you, by the way, it's what Jim Crow was. All the Jim Crow laws were nothing but selective enforcement. Okay, you want to buy a gun? Sure. Send the 12-year-old kid down to the sheriff. You look like a nice young white boy. I guess you can have a nice 22. Not so otherwise. So all of the whole point is selective enforcement, and so many things that we have allowed to happen as we have completely lost the concept of, what the concept of free markets, for example. That's what's destroying cities. Minimum wage laws and the like. And the idea of criminalizing things which shouldn't be criminal at all. Whether we're talking about what somebody can grow in their garden and do in the privacy of their own home, to whether they can have the right to defend themselves from somebody who wants to come and steal what they've got. Especially if that's a bureaucrat.
Let's expand on that just a little bit. You know, state after state is legalizing medical marijuana, and sometimes that's in quotes. And also states are legalizing recreational marijuana.
Well, like Colorado, for example, as I'm sure you're aware.
Exactly, but what the states are doing in many of these cases are saying that those who are prescribed medical marijuana are not going to be able to buy a gun or own a gun
or ever use it.
And that just slides right through. And the problem with that is we don't know that's happening.
Somebody's
going to get a prescription and find out that he can't own a gun anymore.
There are so many ways to do that. The red flag laws are the same kind of thing. Somebody once heard that you might have said something they didn't like or written something on to Facebook or whatever. No more guns for you. And by the way, what are you going to do about it? You know, it's not like you can go to court and get a trial by jury. New Jersey has just decided that people who owned property a year ago are now felons if they didn't do like a good little slave and turn them in, meaning their 10-round
magazines. Well, they turned in only... And they turned in only a couple of guns under that whole program.
Exactly. So they've got tons and tons of new felons. That would be an interesting case for jury nullification. We'll see whether or not maybe New Jersey will be the place where the whole concept of what trial by jury means will make a resurgence. A couple of 100,000 new overnight felons might help to do that. But that takes us to the break. We'll pick it up when we get back.
Hello, hey.
Welcome back now, folks, to the second segment of Drive Time Friday for this 18th of January, 2019. And Jeff is not with us this morning, so it's just Tim Kern and I. And we have been talking about, well, essentially a lot of the things that you'd have to call malaise. Because I know a lot of folks share this concern, whether it's a small town like the one that Tim lives in that is being destroyed by Big Brother's machinations at the local, state, federal level, you name it, and all kinds of things that destroy the concept of free enterprise and the ability of young people to earn an honest understanding of the world and get some experience with jobs, whatever it may be. Instead, they learn that if you really want to get ahead in the world, you have to recognize that the place is corrupt, and the more corrupt you are, the better you'll be able to fit in, and maybe you can even be Secretary of State or President one of these days if you rig the system enough. And we talked about the situation with the four boxes, the bulwarks, the anti-democratic things that were put into the Constitution that once mattered, like the concept of free speech. And how in Colorado and in Louisiana, by the way, there's a federal case in Louisiana where a couple federal judges essentially took their identical law and said it's not only unconstitutionally broad, it's a clear violation of the First Amendment, yada, yada, yada. It's encouraging to me to see that at least you don't have to be a juror. You could even be a federal judge and see the real blatant ones. So the question, Tim, was what do we do? Let me turn it back over to you.
Well, the question is, what do we do? And how do we make getting an honest job at $8 an hour more attractive than running drugs and guns on the weekends for $1,000?
Well, here's the thing. Let me throw this out as a possibility, okay? I have not had a quote-unquote honest job for quite a while. I made it clear to myself when I was a paid electronic engineer years ago at some big companies and then a startup or so that this was going to be my last employment in corporate America. I could see it coming. I didn't necessarily want to deal with the bureaucracy, but I also knew that there were so many things being done to destroy that, right? Whether it's Obamacare or any other number of things. And I concluded, and I've been advising people, hey, what you need to do is come out of the system completely. Don't be paid with fake bucks by a corporate employer, because there are not only too many strings attached, literally, it makes you a slave, whether you like it or not. And the problem is, if you want to make $150,000 a year, that's the only route. On the other hand, if you want to have food, given what may be coming, there are need to be other skills and things that people need to hone. So it's a tough call, simply because as the youngsters in your town are finding out, you want to make $100,000, $300,000 a year? Yeah, be a drug dealer. You can't learn anything that's going to serve you in good stead by mowing lawns or babysitting or doing things that kids used to do to become a responsible adult.
Well, you know, there's so many of those kinds of things that you go out and try to mow a lawn and you're going to have a landscaper call the cops on you.
Yeah, or a lemonade stand, for crying out loud.
I think I may have told you we had the high school kids in Wichita wanted to you know, they didn't believe me when I told them how hard it was to start a business. And they said, well, you know, I said, why don't you go out and start a lemonade stand? But first, go to City Hall and find out what you need to find out in order to do it legally. And, of course, the short answer was, you can't do that. But the long answer was, where you need the preparation to take place, how high the stainless steel has to be, what grade of stainless steel it is, what kind of water filters you need, what certifications you need for the folks that are handling the food, what clothing they need to wear, where do you get your ice? It was one thing after another, and they tallied it up, and the consensus of the class was it'll cost about $350,000 to open a legal lemonade stand. So you got to sell a hell of a lot of lemonade to make that back up.
And there's a message there. And it's the same message that made Bangladesh the success that it is. And Somalia and so many other similar places. So, you know, the United States is headed down that path. You know, to the question of what do we do about it, I contend, well, one of the things we can do about it, you and I are doing today, and that's basically to try to talk about it and let people know. I appreciated your input with respect to, for example, the jury summons. And I probably get four or five people a year tell me, oh, I just got a jury summons, and what do I do? And, of course, I have the little Fiji book I give them. the citizens' rule book and point these things out. And I'll tell them, and it's kind of sort of what you were saying. Look, if you want to get out of jury duty, here is precisely 100% lead pipe cinch how you do it. Just know the truth about what a juror is supposed to do and refuse to take that oath to do the opposite. But I tell them at the same token, you shouldn't want to do that. But on the other hand, it's the reason why I go and spend the time and, well, I do it because it's my civic duty, but I also do it because, hey, it gives me an education into how it is that they're trying to fool them today. And it was really cute. I've seen different techniques over the years for how they did it. And this guy was pretty clever yesterday, but I think the bad news is a whole lot of jurors at least heard something that he would probably have rather they didn't.
Well, there's that, you know. And then the other real question, though, is where can this take it, and how can we get that education to more than the 7 or 8 people that are still in the room when they come around to pick you? How can we show the importance of understanding why we have the set of laws that we have or the Constitution that we have? And how do we get that to more and more people? Homeschooling is of course always under attack. Charter schools are under attack. And you know, there are charter school doesn't necessarily mean it's a great school. It just means it's a different school.
But running with a lot of times the same bureaucratic regs in place and the same requirements.
Well, they have a lot of the same teachers.
Yeah.
You know? And worse yet, some of the ones that even wash out from the public school. Now, that takes some doing sometimes.
Well, either that or it's just like a juror. They have to be able to teach the truth. If I guarantee you, here's one way to wash out of a public school. I have a good friend that just succeeded in doing it. Just tell them, I believe in the God of the Bible.
Yeah, that would probably do it. But, you know, I still think that most of this is the parents' responsibility in the first place. And parents aren't any brighter than the kids. And they'd rather have the students take care of it than have the teachers take care of it. You know, leave it to the professionals. We don't want to educate our kids. We might tell them something wrong, you know.
Well, Tim, for years, the approach that I have taken, and it literally is the very first show that I ever did on this network that I still do, and I think it's honestly, you may disagree, but it's the only real answer. And it's, I cannot make a decision for somebody else. I understand what Scripture says, and it's choose life. I've laid before you this day life and blessing, death and cursing. But that's an individual choice. And so what it also says is come out of her. And that's what I teach and believe. We are, if we understand the situation, we just simply say, I'm not going to play anymore. I am not going to participate in the rigged game. I'm going to take my kids out of the school, get them out, get them out, get them out. I am, I'm probably not going to make nearly as much fake bucks, but I'm going to be able to eat when the you-know-what hits the fan. I'm going to come out. I'm going to be off-grid. I'm going to establish as best I can, a community. Maybe like-minded people will come. And in a small town like this, at least there is a lot more opportunity. I talked to, and I'm sure probably 100 people yesterday heard or at least saw something going on that they didn't understand. Well, that's a whole lot of people in a town that, you know, the entire Mesa here, there's not that many people on within 10 miles of me in any direction.
Well, you're not too far away from where Ayn Rand built her colony.
I don't know about that. Remind me. Tell me where that is.
Well, in Atlas Shrugged, you know, the...
About the Galt's Gulch.
Yeah. But,
we don't know where it really was, but okay, yeah. I looked for it in a plane a couple times.
It's not far. Well, you can't get there from here.
Yeah.
But it's not far from you. There's another town in Colorado that I'd like to visit called Wistful. And in Wistful, Colorado, they have a whole system of courts just like we have here. But instead of doing things in front of a jury, the lawyers will fight. And the winner of the fight wins the case.
Oh, trial by combat.
Yeah, trial by combat. And, of course, the lawyers won't take the case if they think they're going to lose. And in the lower courts, it's just 10 paces with a pistol. And then when you get to the appeals court, you're using short knives. And by the time you get to the Supreme Court, you're using wiffle bats. And remember, you have to fight to the death. So, you know, the really goofy cases just never make it to court. And I like their system. I think it could work most anywhere. And the worst that happens is every time there's a trial, half the lawyers are dead. So eventually you get a pretty good bunch of warrior lawyers that nobody wants to fight, including the other warrior lawyers.
Well, you know, but honestly, I have to suggest to you, Tim, we had that pretty good system here, too. We had this concept of not trial by combat, but trial by jury. And the solution of those who didn't want to fight, but did want the graft and corruption, was just to say, well, we're going to just pervert the system. And that's precisely what we've seen on so many levels.
Absolutely.
In the process of changing gears, let me throw out one other thing. Now, you can be elected president, and that doesn't seem to really matter anymore because, they want to do an electoral college, and it doesn't matter if you take oaths and all that kind of jazz. I did see one relatively clever and kind of disgusting bit of news, all wrapped up in several but related stories this week. First one, the chief traitor in the House, Congress traitor, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, decided that she didn't like what the president was going to say, so he ain't going to say anything. So she disinvited him from the State of the Union message. I'm assuming you saw that. And
yes.
It was kind of disgusting. But then there was this story. I've seen several stories.
On the pretext of not being able to provide security, like they've done every year since Jefferson.
Yeah, because there's a shutdown. Now, the irony and the reason why that's a real whopper, but, you know, her lips were moving. We knew that anyway. They only shut down about 8%, 10% tops of the Big Brother government anyway. The only thing that isn't there are non-essential services. So if it's important, they're funding it anyway. And, tell me that Nancy doesn't believe that her security is important. So believe me, they haven't shut down the security for the Congress of the United States. Now, they may want to see if they can't kill the president. We did have that news this week. But even when she was informed that this was a bogus line, she didn't even check. The Secret Service says, crying out loud, of course we can provide security during the shutdown. And her response, I don't care. Well, anyway, here's the part where I was going to head to when it comes to a creative process of solution. And even though the president basically can not build his border wall and can try to say, I'm going to shut down illegal immigration or do things that the Constitution empowers me to do, or at least the state of emergency that's been declared empowers me to do, and he didn't have to declare it, there are a bunch of them in progress, he did come up with this pretty clever solution. Maybe you heard this. He essentially told Nancy that you ain't going to take your round-the-world trip. If we're that shut down, I had to cancel my trip to Davos, so you aren't going to get to fly on the taxpayer dime all over the world to make foreign policy. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander. He shut down her trip and reminded her that he still has some authority in that regard. And what's you can fly coach if you want, Nance. You'll just have to pay for it yourself.
Well, yeah, he said that he called it an excursion, for one thing, a public relations excursion, which is pretty much what it would have been. Of course, what does the Speaker of the House have to do with foreign policy, you might ask? Well, nothing, you might be told.
Well, I've seen the defense ministers and high-level national security advisors get fired for usurping things like that.
Well, sure, but those were probably, appointees of various
Mike Flynn was one of them.
Yeah, that would be one. There's plenty of them. And there are plenty of them that should have been fired, too, when you get right down to it.
But, I'm thinking of the former Secretary of State, Kerry.
When he did say, if you want to go to Afghanistan, of course, you can always fly commercial. yet, if she did, Congress is supposed to be in session now, so she'd be leaving during work hours to take a vacation. So I don't even think it's good if she pays for her own trip. But I was looking around, and there's hardly any commercial trips to Afghanistan. You know, it's really difficult.
Okay.
You'd probably have to charter a 141 guy to take you over there, or a 91 part 90 part you need to get charter an airplane. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Well, the point I was at least trying to lay out here is we are seeing a pretty clever use of what power he does have of the bully pulpit and the ability to have at least some control with the imperial pen of some of the imperialists. So, if nothing else, you get credit for effort and for thinking outside the box. That's a good thing.
Well, I think a few more people need to be put inside the box, and that would clear up part of it. I keep going back to three campaign promises. Build the wall, drain the swamp, and lock her up. And I'm as impatient as anyone else, but, I'm really hoping, I really see progress being made on all three fronts. And I think that is what we have to look at. Are we going the right direction? We might not get there, but we are going the right direction. It's not just slowing down the trip over the cliff, but it's also maybe changing the direction away from the cliff, which would be my favorite solution.
Well, and in this case, I think the general thread here is to allow people to see the contradictions, the absolutely asinine things that are being done. Now, we're to the point where people have been so badly dumbed down that, the snowflakes no longer even understand what asinine means. These are people that will basically see somebody and call them a fascist by, at the same time, adopting Adolf Hitler's policies, his practices, and his philosophy. And they don't even understand how far off base they are.
People are confused too. Fascism, of course, is an economic system,
the public-private partnership
system, but it only works if you have the supporting political system around it, just like socialism and communism. You have to have the political system around the economics because people don't want to do it. You have to force people to do socialistic or fascistic. To practice socialism or fascism.
Well, and we're practically there, as you've seen. It's destroyed small communities. It's destroying an entire culture, literally. The reason, and I know we're on the same page here. You're right. It's an economic system. It is best described as the public-private partnership. The beauty, the power of fascism is, if you want to get rid of a constitution that says here are things government can't do. Can't restrict free speech, can't restrict freedom of people to keep and bear arms, needs warrants and other inconvenient things, well, then you just say, hey, well, when it suits us, we're private. We're a public-private partnership. We're a private Apple or a private Facebook or a private this or that. We can search our employees' cars as a condition of employment. We can regulate their speech. We can say you can't do this, and we can even be dipping at the public till. And doing it. So that's the insidious, literally demonic beauty of fascism is it's public when it suits them, it's private when it suits them, and it never suits those who are being, sent to the camps.
Well, yeah, of course. And we have to figure out how people can learn the difference between freedom and servitude. And it sounds like it should be easy, but they just don't. It's just not that easy.
No, and they don't even know it. My favorite line from years ago has been, "Let those who falsely believe they're free rattle their chains." And we got a lot of Americans.
That's the old song. Yeah, if you're happy and you know it, shake your chains.
All right. Well, let me throw out another one on the scale of waking people up. Things that's kind of interesting. Here's a piece from the New American that says, yes, we already knew this. The latest migrant caravan has formed in Honduras, kind of like storms that are in the tropics, and headed north towards the Gulf. And this one's 2,000 strong. It stormed into Guatemala. And how many of these have we had now? I've lost track, but I believe the Mexicans haven't. And that was the headline here. More and more Mexicans are just plain getting fed up with it. And they say that, we're sick of these people just continuing to storm on through town here and destroy what we're trying to do. Even though we're poor, we can't afford all of this stuff going on. And it's at least waking some Mexicans up. And I think along the borders, there's people that have already been awakened.
Well, what's strange is why can't the Mexico does not want these folks traversing the country especially when they get stopped at the border of the U.S. So how is it that Mexico, with an army and an organized, more or less organized government, how can they not stop 2,000 unarmed, you know, men, women, and children?
Well, A, they're probably better armed, a lot of the folks in that caravan, because they're MS-13 and they're ISIS and they're others mixed in there with them. They're probably better armed than the average Mexican, for sure. They may be better armed, who knows, given the people that are supporting them, than the Mexican army. But I'm going to suggest, this is politically incorrect and probably a conspiracy theory, Tim, that the same people that armed ISIS and got the ISIS army to fight against the U.S. taxpayer-funded army, when in fact the U.S. taxpayers, whether they knew it or not, were funding both sides, are really going to see the same thing down there. In this case, though, it's the people that run the Mexican army are the same folks that run the deep state and that are the ones funding the caravan. You know, whether it's George Soros or whether he has plausible deniability through a chain of other public-private partners, we're not going to be told. But the point is, yeah, it's the same people running both sides of this game.
I would so love to find out who is actually, you know, writing the checks and how the money gets from them to these folks in the caravans and to the stores for the new Nikes and the backpacks.
Yeah.
And the
caravans of buses
the food
and trucks.
Providers and the truckers and everybody else that's supporting this, who is writing these checks? And it's really hard. Nobody has come up with that. We all say George Soros. We all say the Democrats. We all say whatever. But the question is, who really is doing it? Let's find somebody's name somewhere. And
it might be on Hitler's hard drive, but you're not going to find that either.
Somebody is getting money from somewhere to do this. And that's the real question. Who is it and how are they doing it?
Yeah, and it couldn't happen without that kind of infrastructure and support. That part is obvious.
Now, can I ask a question that's totally off the wall for today?
Sure. We've only got a minute or two, so we'll see how much we can get to it.
Okay, here's a real quick one. Aren't most of the workers who are being furloughed union members? And the answer is yes. And the question then is, doesn't the union have a strike fund or any contingency money put aside for this kind of an eventuality?
That's an interesting point.
It's not like there's never been a shutdown before.
Yeah, I wonder when the air traffic controllers union did so and Reagan fired them. That's been quite a while. We can at least remember some aspects of it, but I hadn't looked at that in a bit.
I think we ought to look into AFSCME and find out what these people are paying their dues for.
Yeah. Well, I maybe they're not paying the dues. Maybe the taxpayers are picking up the bill. Ultimately, that's exactly what's happening.
Ultimately, it always comes from your pocket.
Yeah. Well, either that or it comes from the pockets of the people that just print a little extra to cover up for it. So, well, we've got less than 40 seconds here today, Tim. I guess, in summary, we're watching... you know, I'm kind of curious to see what will Trump do. I would be tempted if I was him to say, okay, I'll just give the State of the Union address from the White House, and I'll just talk from the hip and tell them a whole bunch of stuff that they're not going to hear otherwise. Would it be covered? You know, those are always the issues. He better have his private security on hand if he's going to say something they don't want him to hear. Take us out.
Well, you know, we've got 167 hours before we get to talk again, so I'm glad that we had touched as many different things as we can.
Well, unfortunately, Tim, we've got just seconds left for today, so thanks for being with us, folks. Thanks, Tim. Shabbat shalom, folks. Take